Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
How you doing?
Hi.
Good to see you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
You ready?
I love cats.
Oh my god, I'm so super excited. There's so many.
Is there so many?
Literally.
Should we go? So they just have them in here, roaming about?
Yeah.
Living their life?
Living their best life.
Love it.
Right, let's go. Let's do this.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There we go.
Thanks.
Let's get some
treats going.
Lottie, thank you so much for joining me on Headstrong.
Thank you for having me at the Cat Cafe as well.
I know.
We are. I love this. This cafe. Is so cute.
I know. They're being very, very sweet.
Oh.
Come here. Oh, gosh. It's so sweet.
It is so cute.
I'm really, really excited to have you on. Are you going to come up?
I think he just wants a treat.
I know. Yeah. I'm just being used.
Oh.
But as you know, Headstrong is rooted in mental health.
Yes.
And I know that you're really passionate about that.
Yes.
And you talk about it a lot.
I do.
And an advocate for it. So thank you
for joining me.
I'm also really conscious that I don't want to ask you things that you've been asked before. And I just think that it's a great place to do it.
You messed up by having me with cats.
I know.
Because now I'm not going to be listening to you for the whole time.
Oh, God. I mean, what about, let's go straight in terms of growing up.
Yeah.
Did you have pets growing up?
I did have pets growing up. So I had a cat when I was born, but she died quite early. And then I had a dog.
Yeah.
Because my mum grew up with English setters, so she wanted an English setter. And she had a hunting dog. But the one that we got was a show dog, so he was completely different in character. And he was, okay, no.
This is hilarious.
But yeah, so I grew up with a cat and a dog, yeah, when I was younger. So I had animals around me all the time, which I quite liked.
What was childhood like for you in terms of growing up? Because both of us are lucky enough to come from a privileged background, but
well,
in the same breath,
do you know what? People think that I came from a rich family, and I actually didn't. My parents are middle class, I guess, but not wealthy as such. Like I started working very young.
Mm.
We lived in a place called Lindfield in West Sussex. And it's a lovely town. Like I grew up in a very nice way. Like my parents were incredible. My dad retired when he was in his 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so cute. My dad retired when he was in his 60s. And he had me when he was in his 50s.
Mm.
So he retired when I was quite young. So then it was just my mum with the income and my dad had his pension. We didn't grow up with that much money. But I started working when I was about 15, sort of 16 years old. And from then, yeah, I was making a lot of money. But yeah, my parents were never rich, but it's such a common misconception. People always are like, you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth. I'm like, actually, I paid for my own private school as well. Oh!
Naughty. Very naughty.
I paid for my own private school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow,
so I went when I was 17. So when you leave secondary, I went to private school for the last 2 years, and I paid to go.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I think it's a common misconception about me, but yeah.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
But in terms of Were your parents supportive then of you getting into work and like working from a young age?
100%, yeah. Like I think they thought, because I was so excited about it when I first started out, so I think they were just excited for me being excited. Mm. And it does, from the outside, I will say, like, it looks very exciting. But I think I didn't quite realise the pressure and all of the things that would actually come with modelling. And I think it is quite weird that they don't really tell you, your agents or your management, they don't actually really inform you very well on what it's actually going to be like when you start modelling and the different pressures, which I'd wish I'd been a little bit more clued up on. Because as a young girl going into an industry like fashion, where it's, you know, all about how you look and how people see you and who you're wearing and who you're surrounded by, I have never been someone who cared about sort of like looks and things like that. Like, I never really cared about what I cared about what I ate, in the sense of, like, you know, I would eat healthily and things like that, but I didn't care about, oh, if I wanted a cake, I'd eat a cake. Like, I was never worried about those sorts of things. And I think when I started modeling, it really made me worried about, like, what I was eating, because they would be very mean to me about, you know, who, like, what I was wearing or things like that. And I was so young, so I would show up to castings in, like, leggings and things like that. I didn't really know about fashion. I was super young. I was still at school.
Just go comfy.
I would just go comfy, or, you know, I didn't realize that you had to look a certain way.
Yeah.
And I'd show up, and I remember showing up to my agency in New York, my old agency, and they were like, oh my gosh, you can't wear that. She was so mean to me. I, like, honestly felt like crying. I was like, because I didn't know. And she was like, you're going to have to go through this, you know, box of clothes, and we'll find you something out of there. Like, gosh, you imagine if she turned up, like, sort of humiliating me in front of, like, the whole office. And I was like, my gosh. And that was the sort of the beginning of it. And I just became very trodden down by it. So I would just follow the rules after a while. And I got a stylist. I got a personal trainer at 18. Like, I was very much like, you know, we are going to shape you into this, and that's what you're going
to
be.
I mean, there's quite a savage toxicity to it behind the scenes, I guess, because, I mean, what everyone sees from a model's perspective is the front cover, you know, the photo shoot.
Oh my God,
but then behind the scenes,
this
it's like,
the thing, it's so unglamorous. Like, if you actually look even just behind the model, you'll see like 10 clamps, like clamping the clothes together. Like, something's holding up the hair in the back. Like, it's all very, and then there's like 10 lighting guys. It's like, so it isn't really what it looks like. And when you think you see these models, you're like, oh my God, the clothes fit them so well. No, it's all sewn together. Sometimes they sew you in. Sometimes they clamp your thing in, and sometimes you're in shoes that are two sizes too big for you. So it's not, it really isn't. And I see all these catwalk shows now of girls falling over, and I'm like, people don't understand. When they have sample sizes for runway shows. So the clothes are sample size, the shoes are sample size. If you don't fit into the shoe, you don't walk. Like, it's simple as that. Like, so.
It's cutthroat.
Yeah, it's cutthroat. Yeah, so if they don't have a shoe your size, you've got to make it work. Like, even if it's two sizes too small, and a lot of these models are 5'10", 5'11", and so obviously when they get a shoe that's smaller, they normally have bigger feet. They can't fit into them. So when you see them and they're like buckling, that's because their feet have gone numb, so they can't feel their feet anymore. Mm. So they fall over because their feet have gone numb. It's crazy. It's actually really savage.
Not many industries that would kind of...
I know, and you really don't get paid that much for runway. Like, you get a couple hundred per show. Yeah, like, not even a lot. Obviously, when I was younger and I started doing campaigns, the campaigns were more...
That's what's
you
profitable.
You got paid a lot more, yeah. But nowadays...
Gets you through private school, doesn't it?
I know. Well, that is one of my biggest regrets, paying for that private school.
Really?
I'm just not an academic, you know? Like,
oh, I had a good time, though.
I had a great time. But yeah, I'm not really an academic. But yeah, no, like, I think you don't know all these sorts of... You see the glamorous side of modelling. And when I was younger, I saw my sister getting photographed, and I saw, you know, all these models in the magazines. I thought, oh my gosh, they look so glamorous, and that they were at all these events. But little do you know, all the actual hard work that goes into creating the looks, or wearing the dresses that you can't breathe in, or wearing the shoes that are making your feet bleed, you know, so.
Okay, well, you mentioned catwalks. We got to talk about the cats now. We are here.
The catwalk, yeah.
I know, literally, it was perfect. You
rattle it again so they can't.
Yeah, I know, let's get some cats.
Hey guys.
Look at their heads all turned.
Come on. Oh.
So yeah, we are here at Java Whiskers in White City, where they do this lovely little cat experience. And we've got loads of cats in here, which is really nice. But part of the thing that they do here is it's just people come because A, they can't have a cat at home sometimes, or because it's just, you know, a therapeutic thing.
Hanging
around animals, it's really nice. You know, they're so calm and lovely.
Oh, and they sound cute when they're
meow. I know. And what I love about here as well is you're allowed, you can adopt the cats. And we were talking earlier that there might be a cat going home with you later.
Oh my God. One or two, you know? No, because I honestly, I love cats. I think they're such a sweet animal. I mean, I like all animals, actually. My friend, my best friend, hates dogs.
Really?
And I don't understand it. She just doesn't like them. She doesn't hate them. She just doesn't like them.
There we go. Hello.
And she used to live with a girlfriend who had a dog, and she would keep the dog in the bed. What's your view on that? Do you keep your dog
in
the
bed? Great question. I mean, Dad, don't listen to this. He likes to be under the covers.
In my bed. Under the covers.
Because
in the
bed. He likes to snuggle. He's a snuggler. But
she
strictly sleeps downstairs, Dad. Promise.
Do you guys live together?
No.
Oh.
But that's what I said, right? part of the deal. No, I'm like, I think he's very much part of my, like, my life in terms of my house now where I live.
Oh, okay.
Part of the family group. So, yeah. And he's lovely. Like, if I am out for the day,
they become like a part of
you. He hangs out with my housemates. And he'll, if I'm not there, they'll take him out for a walk. Like, the other day, I just moved in and I was like, I'm actually going away for the night. And they were like, we'll look after him. And I literally just met these guys. Uh-huh. And it was so lovely. But I just think that's just something so endearing about animals, just being around them.
I am so that person that goes to parties, and then if I see a dog, I'm like sat on the floor with a dog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like on the floor, like lying down with
them. Yeah, 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 definitely. I mean, let's talk about just there as well, with in terms of the management and the modelling and stuff. You mentioned your sister Kate, but did you ever feel like you could reach out to somebody for advice and help in that regard?
No. Honestly, I felt very alone in what I was doing, even though there was a lot of people around me and I had a lot of management and things like that. There wasn't anyone that I felt like I could be really honest with about like what I was going through. And like, this is the thing, I didn't want to ever project like poor me, like, oh, like poor Lottie who gets loads of money and goes on all these fab photo shoots and flies first class. And you know, I didn't want to tell anyone that I was struggling because I thought I was being selfish and like I was taking it for granted. And my agency kind of made me feel like that. They would sort of say things like, oh, you know, like so many people would die to do this. Like, you know, like they couldn't grasp why I was not obsessed with what I was doing. But it was very different from how I thought it was going to be. And it was a lot of traveling when I was very young, and
it's tough as well, like not seeing your friends.
And I was 18 years old when I first properly started traveling, and you know, I moved to London when I just finished school, and so that was when I first started traveling. And I was here, there, everywhere. I was in Japan, New York, Paris, Milan, London, LA. It was just like so, and I was barely home, and I felt that I was missing out on so much. And I know that sounds silly because, you know, you think, oh, like when you're 18, like all you're missing out on is going clubbing with your friends. And I would see my friends going out clubbing. And I know it sounds silly, but I was 18 and I was like, I just want to be with my friends. I had a boyfriend at the time and I really missed him. And I just, the whole industry as well is quite fake. So the people around me weren't really my friends.
Yeah.
They were people that were friendly with me because of my last name, because of the power that I had at that time. I was doing, you know, very high fashion brands such as like Bulgari. I was in the cover of Vogue when I was 18. I was in the cover of Elle. I did pretty much every publication like when I was that young. And I did, all of these really amazing brands. And I think people just were nice to me because of that. But I'm quite a naive person. And like, if I'm nice to someone and like someone's nice to me, I think that it's because they like me. I never, when I was younger, thought, oh my God, like they obviously are just using me. And I lived with a girl in London at the time. And even when we would sort of, you know, go out for drinks and things like that, and I'd meet someone and have a really nice chat, she'd be like, babe, you have to be careful of who because you don't know whether they actually like you or whether they actually are just being nice to you because of who you are. And I just had never grasped that. Like, I always tried to be humble and down to earth and kind to people. And so I started quite early on with like using drugs and alcohol as a crutch.
As
a coping mechanism, which there is not a lack of in the fashion industry.
Yeah, sure.
So there were people in positions of power that were giving me drugs and alcohol when I was very young. And so it didn't seem bad to me. Like, it was never, you know, when I was younger, obviously my mum and dad, you know, my mum and dad have never done drugs really. So they would never, they never had that conversation with me really. I grew up in quite a bit of a bubble where, you know, my mum and dad were amazing and they were still together. And, you know, I just never really had experienced drugs and like never spoke, I'd never really spoken about it, honestly. Like, you know, weed and things like that when I was really like 15, yeah, you know, yeah, but, yeah. And then, you know, going to London, moving to London and being around a lot older people. My boyfriend at the time was 27. And his, you know, the people that we were hanging around with did a lot of drugs, as people of, you know, young, at a young age do. And I started realizing quite early on, my relationship wasn't going very well with him and he was unfaithful and he was also dealing with his own problems in his life. And he was also using drugs as a coping mechanism. And so I think I saw that and I kind of instilled it into my life because it was the only time that I felt I could be like free a little bit. Like when I was working constantly, I had to be like on my A game. And then, so when I got to come back to London or whatever and do drugs, I was like, yes. Mm. Like I get, this is, because it felt like freedom to me.
Your escape.
It felt like my escape. Mm. But it very quickly became something that I used because I was not happy.
So did you become reliant?
Very much so,
really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Was it like multiple times a week? And even when you were sober?
Oh my God. When I was really young, it was 5 times a week.
Really?
It was constant, yeah. And like, I never could have been honest with myself back then that I was using it too much. And I don't feel that I had an addiction to it. I just liked that I could escape from, I just needed
and
to get
numbing,
away.
Numbing what
and
was
it
going
numbed
on.
Every single feeling that I had of like anger or upset or whatever, or loneliness or whatever. Mm. It was almost, it became like a little bit like my friend. And it was like, so, and also when you have people sort of enabling you around you, when you're like, I'm talking high fashion events and people are like in a penthouse suite and it's people that work for a brand that is very well known and they're sat there doing drugs with you.
Really?
As a like 19-year-old. Like, that's so weird to me
now.
I mean,
in what industry? That, I mean, it shouldn't happen
industry?
In any industry.
That should never happen
the fact that
in
it's
any
in
industry.
One that's so in the public sphere.
And the fact that no one is like, this is, maybe we shouldn't be like enabling our client to be doing drugs. Sorry, it's so cute. Maybe we shouldn't be enabling our client to do drugs, you know? Like, we should want her to be on her A game and be doing her best and, yeah. Like, be, you know, going, well, cut, like, you know, wake up in the morning, let's go to a gym class, all of us, or let's...
Yeah, let's get her a smoothie.
Let's go for breakfast, all of us, in the morning. Instead, it was so, you know, because it, a lot of these events are in the evening, so it was like, in the evenings, it was lots of alcohol, and it goes hand in hand, so.
So when did it all come to a head then, in terms of when were you like, because like you basically fell out of love with it and realized it wasn't for you.
I just don't even know if I ever loved it. Mm. This is the thing, I think I have grown up with being in the shadow of my sister always. And I know there's this whole Nepo baby thing now, and like, I'm not trying to say that, because I want to clarify this, I'm not trying to say that it's not a privilege. Mm. I'm not trying to say that, you know, I've obviously had doors open for me. Obviously, you know, and I have had some incredible experiences and I've worked with some amazing people and I've met some of my best friends today because of that job. But it was not for me. Like, and I being constantly compared to someone, whether they're famous or not, is a pain. And I'm sure I have friends, you know, even that have very rich parents that consistently feel not good enough because their parents have created this incredible business or they're doing so well. And they just feel like, I am never gonna be that, am I? Like, I'm never gonna be the owner of a multi-million dollar company. I'm never gonna, or you know, and it is hard. Like, these people will laugh about it and like, oh, Nepo baby, whatever. But it's hard being compared to someone, whether you're, and I don't get why it's just nepotism this happens in, because there's lots of rich people that this happens to as well that aren't famous, you know, that have really rich parents.
Doors opened, even like looking at people in the city, like
Boris Johnson. Like, yeah. You know, the list can, you know what I mean? You can continue with the list of like how many people have had privileges from so many things, you know? But it's like, it doesn't necessarily mean your life is great. That's what, all I'm saying is, it doesn't, just because you have a step up in life doesn't mean your life is amazing. Mm. But it, and that's what kind of happened. And I felt like, oh my God, I should be feeling like this is amazing. Because that's what everyone else around me is telling me, that, oh my God, you're so lucky. Oh my God, you're so, like, you look so beautiful and you have all of this. I was thinking, but why do I feel horrible on the inside? Mm. Why don't I feel like how I look right now? Like, I'm wearing these thousands of pounds outfits and I feel like I want to die, you know? Like, and it just was not making me happy. And I just think, as well, because of my height, I'm not the typical height for a model, and I knew that, and I felt like an imposter. Like, I felt like in, what's it called? Imposter syndrome. Yeah. Like, I just felt like this life was not right for, I just was like.
Just, it was fake.
It was fake. I was like, it didn't feel real to me that I was like going to all these events and I was staying in the Four Seasons. I was like, what, I don't belong here. This is not me. Like, I'm not a flashy person either. Like, I don't care about really expensive things. And like, I never really cared. Like, I know it sounds bad. Sorry, I never really cared about fashion. I was just like, okay, like, people, like, oh my God, the new season, like, of that. And I was like, okay, like, it kind of looks the same to me as, like, the last season one. Like, I just didn't.
I need to talk to you about this because there's
go
something
for it.
Like,
sorry,
when, no, I love it. But something specific that you just mentioned there is, you know, when sometimes you just see people going mad about, like, a runway and they're like, oh my God, this is revolutionary.
Babe, I would
is
say,
that, it surely is fake.
I'd sit at these runway shows and I was like, what am I missing? Like, what?
I'm sorry, am I watching the same thing?
Are we watching the same thing? Some people.
Not that I'm being
really
rude,
sat there
because I know that they've worked hard. And
but I honestly, half of them I zoned out for. Like, and I can appreciate artwork and I can appreciate hard work that these people put in. And you know what? The clothes are beautiful, but I don't see it as the other people see. And I see people that are really interested in fashion. I saw and I met so many people that were very interested in fashion. I was like, you know what? Good for you. Because it is good for you for being interested in something and loving something like that. Yeah. And I met so many incredible designers that are so hardworking, but it just, I didn't get it. And at that moment, I kind of was like, I should not be, and that's why I felt I didn't deserve it as well. Because I was like, I shouldn't, if I'm not sitting here loving it, why am I here? Mm. Like, there are so many other more deserving people that love fashion, that would love to be at this runway show, that would love to be dressed in these clothes, that would love to be doing these shoots. And I just didn't really enjoy it, honestly.
It's fair enough.
I'm like, shoot me.
Yeah, literally.
Sue me, but like,
onwards
yeah, I didn't enjoy
it.
Like, and I think people struggle with that. Like, and I get lots of people, you know, now with that comments and things like, you know, oh, you know, you couldn't even do that and you're just, you know, you're doing OnlyFans now. And I'm like, no, I chose to do that. Like, I quit.
I have a choice.
Yeah, my old agency actually put out a statement saying that I got fired from them. I have the receipts. I quit. So if they want to try and challenge me on that one, but I quit. I quit. I sent them an email and I was just like, look, it's not for me anymore. But like, I really appreciate everything they did for me, and I had some great experiences.
Yeah, I mean, so it's all a life lesson, right?
It really is.
Yeah. I mean, something that I want to talk about is tackling fame at a very young age.
Yeah.
Because obviously you started, as you say, at 15, 16, and then by 18, people know who you are. You're on the covers of things. And in my opinion, I haven't experienced it, but at the age of 18, that's a very unnatural thing to get.
I mean,
all that
I was
attention.
Even younger when I think I was 16 or 17 when I started doing shoots, but at a less of a level, sort of. I was flying out to certain places, but I was not missing school, so I was getting taken out. So when it was like holidays or a weekend or something, and I mean, I'd experienced fame from a really young age because I saw it with my sister. Mm. But I thought when I was really young, I remember my mum showing me a magazine. She's like, "Look, it's Kate," and I was like, "I really thought everyone had a sister in a magazine." I was like, "Okay, and?"
Well, it's like, all cool. You ever know, right?
Because she'd always showed me pictures of her in magazines and books and things. And I was like, "Okay, cool." Like, I honestly really didn't get it when I was that young. And then as I got older and we were going to, you know, going out with her and things like that, going to, like, you know, dinner and something, then I saw the paparazzi. And back when I was very young, there was no social media. Mm. So the paparazzi was the only form of way you could ever see into a celebrity's life. So that when there was paparazzi back then, 200 of them, there was 30 paparazzi outside waiting for her. Like, it was... They would camp outside of her house. They would sit in vans, and they would sometimes they would climb into the back garden.
It's like harassment.
It is harassment, yeah. And there was no boundaries with them. They would, and I remember being in her house, and I just sort of opened the window, and they would try and take pictures inside the windows and things like that. Like, it was really
invasive
and really intensive. There wasn't as many rules back then with it, though. So it's changed now. But that was my first experience of fame, and I was like, I thought it was so cool. I was like, oh my God.
But it's the age, like at that age, you're like, this is
oh great. My God. I was listening to like, when I grow up, I want to be famous. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so a pussycat doll. Like, I'm going to be famous when I grow up. And I thought it was going to be so awesome. And like, then experiencing it firsthand, I think also seeing what it did to my sister in a way, like how it affected her, you know, I think, you know, it's very difficult to deal with that. And I think seeing how difficult it was for her to deal with, then when I got a bit older and understood that, I was like, oh gosh, it actually is quite hard. Like, and I first started going around London and there was paparazzi. And at first I thought it was fun. And then there was times where they would follow me home and I was like, okay, yeah, goodbye now. You know, and you're like, okay, I've had enough now. And, but there isn't enough, you know? You can't just go, I don't want this anymore.
You can't turn it on and turn it off.
Because
again, like you were saying, you're lucky to be in this position. You can't be like,
exactly, it's difficult. Exactly. And that's why I've really struggled ever asking for help or telling people that I'm struggling, because I was shut down every single time, whether it was by people on social media, whether it's by, I'm in a position where I'm not allowed to complain about anything apparently. So it's like, and that's why I feel like I have a very, I've had a very bad complex with sort of being a bit of a pushover in life with friends, with, you know, people around me. I was a yes person for a really long time. Mm. I would pay for people's flights. I paid for my friend's rent. I would send people money, like $2,000 if they needed money for, you know, if they were struggling or something. And then I had a friend steal money off of me, which was really difficult. And he stole like upwards of £10,000 from me. I never got it back, never got an apology. He felt that he deserved it. And that's
for
when
being
I was,
your friend.
For doing me favors or, you know, just being my friend. Yeah, like, and things like that. And I just thought, and I saw his attitude when he would speak to people as well. There was a lot of red flags with him, but his sort of attitude when we would walk in a restaurant, he'd be like, oh, why isn't table ready yet? And I've never been that person. I'm like, oh, it's fine, I'll wait in a queue. Like, yeah. I don't mind, I'm not famous.
You
like,
walk
I'm,
into the room
I'm
and
not Kim Kardashian.
Demand attention.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I demand it, sorry.
I would say to him as well, we're not like A-list celebrities here, all right? Like
Tom Cruise.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, if I was with Tom Cruise, I'd be like, right, we need to get this man a table, you know? But I was like, we're at the Bluebird Cafe in Chelsea.
Yeah.
I think we're okay. We're not going to get swarmed.
There's going to be a table.
There's going to be a table ready in 5 minutes. But I also, like, I've always been polite to servers. And I've always been polite to people. And I attracted a lot of negative energy from doing drugs and drinking a lot of alcohol and partying a lot. I attract a lot of negative energy and I started to feel very negative about myself. So then you attract people that feel very negatively about themselves. Mm. And those people can sometimes be the worst human beings ever to exist. So I've really struggled with like a lot of friendships and things like that. So yeah.
So when was the first time that you felt comfortable reaching out and what was it? Do you remember that?
God,
like actually looking
honestly,
for help.
The first time I properly reached out for help was when I went to rehab a year ago.
Really?
So that's how long it took, yeah.
So have you been tackling this
internally? In my mind and internally, I've been tackling feeling not good enough, not pretty enough, not a model, but then should be doing better than OnlyFans. But then, you know, and it was just I felt like I could never do anything right. Like when I was doing modeling, I had tons of comments of people saying, oh, you don't deserve this, you know, you're never going to be Kate, you give up, you know, you're not. And then I started to believe it, because when you people are telling you this and you start, I felt already not good enough about myself and not deserving of it. And then I started doing something I really enjoyed, which is OnlyFans. Oh no, you should go back to doing modeling, because I was like, how can I win then? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to just give up on life? Do you want me to just lie down on the floor and let a bus hit me? Like, I don't get what they want from me. Like, and I just, I didn't deal with that hate very well either. And I was, you know, in a place where I was very up in the air. I was in Los Angeles and I was being a little bit manipulated by the person that had got me to be a part of, because I was part of another company before I was part of OnlyFans that did the same thing as OnlyFans. A little bit manipulated by him. And because I had sort of said, to my friend, I like this thought of OnlyFans, and oh my God, you have to do it. Oh, you know, we'll shoot together. It seemed all very romanticized, so I started doing it, and it wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be at first, but now I've really found my way with it.
Do you think you are easily manipulated?
Mm-hmm.
And why do you think that? Do you think it's because you're a people pleaser?
I'm a massive people pleaser. And when I was younger and I was doing modeling with my agents, when they would tell me to do something, I did it. I would do it. If they said, I'm not really feeling your boyfriend right now, maybe not. So I was like, okay, I'll kind of have to get rid of him. And or don't change your hair,
so
get a personal trainer.
So you're encouraged to make these decisions.
So I was, everything that they said to me, I had to listen to. So I just felt like, and if I didn't, I was made to feel very small and humiliated. And I felt embarrassed for being me. I didn't really care, because I didn't really care about the fashion stuff. I would just wear the clothes that I like to wear. And I remember going to a Tesco's once. I was wearing when you go to Tesco, around the corner shop, I was just wearing a crappy outfit. And I got paparazzi'd, and they were like, right, next time you go to the shop, you have to be styled by your stylist, who, by the way, was expensive as well. So it's that's no point. Who cares?
For me to go pick
I had to look good all the time, even when I'm going to the shop, is exhausting. I felt like I maybe missed out a little bit on those teenage years of being just free and messing up without judgment as well. Most of people my age when I was 18, 19 were going out 4 or 5 times a week or so. They were at university, they were drinking every day, they were experience everything for the first time. And I was experiencing it too, but I was in the spotlight. So I got heavily judged for what I was doing. So that was very difficult.
I actually can't imagine what it's like. But when you were internalizing those, your mental health basically, what your coping mechanisms were drugs and alcohol, but did you ever think, actually, do you know what, do I need to go do exercise? Do I need to do breathing exercises?
Well, this
do
was
I need
the
to
problem
do,
with
you know
it.
What I mean?
So when I first moved to London, I got a personal trainer and I was doing, I did very well with him at the beginning. I like fitness, I really enjoy it. And we were working out 4 or 5 times a week actually at this point. And then I met my boyfriend at the time and he liked going out. So then I kind of traded that in for the going out. Because I can do it where I just work out and don't drink, or I can do it where I just go out, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I'm very much all in for whatever I do.
Yeah.
If I do something, I do it to the ground.
You get obsessed really quick.
Very obsessed.
It's a nightmare.
Really obsessed with it. And so I needed something to focus on, but also at the time I was struggling with a lot and I just didn't feel that exercise was doing it for me. But this is the thing, I quite well at the beginning managed to balance going out and working out as
so
well.
So control's been an issue.
Yeah.
Because it's either I'm going to do this at an extreme or this at an extreme, and there's not quite the equilibrium and balance. But, we'll talk about it in a bit, but you've got to a point where you're now not drinking, and I bet that's given you balance, right?
I mean, I'm only 12 days sober, but...
but it's 12 days better than you were.
12 days better than I was before,
so you've
always
got to think positively about it, right?
Exactly, and, as I've gotten older, I am much better at managing it, you know? And I can go for a few drinks and here and there and things like that without having to take it to the next level, but... it's not worth it for me anymore, the feeling that I feel when I drink alcohol or when I take drugs.
I mean,
it sets me back, and it makes my mind foggy and I don't think clearly, and I want to be the best version of myself now, and I feel that I deserve it.
Yeah, I do want to talk to you about tattoos. Because it's obviously your favourite topic of conversation.
I mean, I love tattoos.
I know, but you love
too
it.
Too much.
But in terms of when you were modelling, did you get told, don't get that?
So they told me not to get tattoos when I was there, obviously, because that obviously ruins the vibe. But that was when I was quite young. And I think the more I rebelled, the more I was like, here we go. I'm going to really piss them off. And I colored my hair pink at one point. They hated it.
I liked that.
I liked
that
too.
I really vibe
pink
hair. I'm thinking this might be my bad boy summer.
Yeah, do it. My God, I love it. Bleach it and pink in it, love.
Done.
That's the hottest thing for girls. We love that. Well, I love that, so not going to speak for everyone. But I know a lot of girls love bleach blonde and bleached pink hair and things like that. Tattoos. So I got my foot. This was my first one.
Okay, cute.
A heart. I wanted to see if it hurt or not.
Yeah.
And then
whoops.
Got more and more and more.
I sneezed and here we are.
I got more when I sort of quit. I had a few here and there.
What's the latest one?
The one on my face.
Ah, God. Here comes the Bali story. No.
Oh, yeah, the Bali story.
Right, no, we know, everyone knows what's happened because it's well documented.
Yeah.
What's going on now? Like, how do you feel about it? Are you going to like it or are you like...
I'm getting it removed later today.
Today?
Actually, yes.
Exclusive.
Exclusive.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really?
So I'm getting it removed today.
So my question, this is naivety for you. I don't have any tattoos because I'm an actor as well and that just stresses me out. But is it once you go or does it take like 6 goes to when you go for removals? I don't know.
It takes as long as it takes.
Oh,
it
really? It's just ongoing.
So it just depends on how thick the tattoo is, how large it is,
yeah,
how deep they've gone into and penetrated your skin.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed this one doesn't.
Yeah.
So I have to numb my face before I go. I'm really nervous, but I'm going to get a couple others. So I've got my ex's initials here that needs to go. And then...
Funny that.
Made some good decisions.
Let me guess, were you sober as well?
Yeah, no. And then I have one here as well that's had about 4 or 5 sessions that just needs a few more as well. Yeah. But yeah.
So you mentioned going to rehab last year. So, I mean, I think the common misconception with rehab is it's a place for addicts and addiction. Whereas from what I've heard from listening to you, it's about healing.
I went for depression.
Yeah.
And that was my problem. I was severely depressed and I used drugs and alcohol as a crutch. Like, I even spoke to the people at my rehab. They said, you don't show this sort of signs of an addict. Because I've never really tried any other drugs. Like, I only have really had one that I was really doing. And I just never really even wanted to try any others or anything. So, yeah, it wasn't that for me. I needed something for myself. Like, I needed just to have that. You know, and it sounds really strange when I talk about it, but yeah, that was just how it was.
Well, what was that experience like? Because you were there 28 days, right?
28 days, yeah.
I mean, I've been on a...
It doesn't happen.
I've been lucky enough to go on a 3-week holiday, and that felt long. But 4 weeks in rehab.
Well, do you know what? 4 weeks isn't actually that long in rehab. I had the best time.
Yeah.
I loved it. And it was, the people around me were so supportive. Baybury Clinic, if anyone, just going to plug them because they're great. And
that's nice.
I went to a private one as well. So I was in a group of, there was only 3 of us living in this house. They also have a larger group rehab as well. But I just wanted a private because I wanted to talk privately with one.
And are you still counselor. Friends with those, the people that you were in rehab with?
So one of the girls who I was in rehab with has just had a baby. I think she's pregnant or she's having a baby. Yeah.
Sweet.
So that's good. But they were there for stress and burnout, the other 2 people. So they actually, you can go for it if you're just having a hard time. It's just a support system.
What about your relationship now with yourself then in terms of self-worth? Do you like value yourself much more now? Like,
so
you look at yourself
more
in the mirror and go, actually, do you know what? I can be Lottie Moss myself, not
what
the one that I was being told to be.
My affirmations in the morning.
Yeah.
I have good people around me now that make me feel happy about who I am and pull me, you know, they pull me up and they make me feel good and they make me laugh. And I think that's the recipe to it. It's just being around good people. So you are who you surround yourself with massively.
Mm.
And believing in myself because like I'm awesome. Like, and I have to remember that. Like,
yeah.
I'm a really cool, nice, kind, good person. And like, I just have to keep, you know, instilling that. And you just have to keep instilling those thoughts into your brain of like positivity.
And you've got to remember as well, everything that has happened is actually a part of the learning
the
process.
Learning.
And
you shouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have had it any different.
Yeah, don't regret it because you're not going to achieve anything. You can't change it.
Exactly. No, I'm glad I went through
Which
it
as
at a young
as
age especially. And I'm glad I'm moving into this stage in my life in a happier, more positive direction.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. And now, okay, that's relationship with yourself. Let's talk about relationships in general, which of course you have such a wonderful experience.
Well, this
is
fun.
No,
anyway, I've got to go.
What's your current situ?
My current situ is I am single.
What happened to...
My boyfriend.
Yeah.
We broke up.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Was that tough? Because it was long distance, right?
It was long distance.
And that
it was
just
too difficult for me.
Yeah, right.
He was happy to give it a go, and I just was not feeling doing that. I just was like, it's too difficult. And we'd already spoken about it, and he'd already said that he was not up for moving here or to, you know, I was planning on moving to Los Angeles at the time, and he didn't want to move there either, and I don't want to live in Perth.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, where is this going? You know,
sure.
Like, so he was lovely and we still talk and he's great. But yeah, I'm single now and ready to mingle.
Would you say that you're kind of the person that you've attracted has changed? Because like you, I'm guessing
it's
used to attract
so
the bad boy
from it. I was at the beginning. I was attracting sewer rats.
Yeah.
And then now I'm attracting really good guys.
Yeah.
But when you're not feeling good about yourself, people see that and
they go,
if she doesn't feel good about herself, why do I have to feel good about her? Why do I have to treat her nice if she doesn't treat herself well, you know? Mm. So you attract that kind of guy. So I was attracting the worst of the worst, truly the worst guy. The stories I have, I won't bore you with them, but yeah, it's, I could write a book, honestly. start a podcast. But yeah, so, but definitely now I treat myself better and I'm much more attractive now because I'm not like going out and getting wasted and
you're sophisticated, you're a businesswoman.
People are vibing me. Like I was out the other night, I was like, oh my God, I'm great. I just had never had that before. I felt so self-conscious before when I went out and saw people and met guys. And now I'm like, damn, bitch.
In relationships, I want to talk about OnlyFans in a relationship. Because I spoke with Megan Barton-Hanson about it.
Oh my God, I love her.
And she was basically like, oh, they think it's the best thing since sliced bread when you're in the relationship. But as soon as there's an argument, they'll use it against you and go, who wants to be with someone who's on it? And it's just, it's a very interesting thing.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? As well, like, I think guys, men romanticize this whole thing of like a porn star or a woman that does adult content. They're like, oh, you're so fucking hot. But they are far too insecure to be with someone that's in that industry. Mm. And that's all it is. It's not anything to do with the women doing it. And it's nothing to do with, they say, oh, no, I just don't want my girl to be. No, it is, you're not secure enough.
Yeah.
That's all
don't
you have
project
to say.
It.
When a guy says to me, like, I would never date a girl, I'm like, all you had to say was that you're insecure. That's all you had to say. Like, if you wouldn't date me, that's cool. But like, I would never date you either. Like, yeah. This is the thing sometimes with these men as well. They make up a scenario in their head and it's like, they're like, I would never. And I'm like, babes, you're talking, it's not going to happen. Like, it was never going to happen, babe. Like, they're making up scenarios.
Yeah, no, you're
crazy.
Absolutely right. What's kind of next for you then? Are you just surviving and thriving and just like the best place at the moment?
Yeah, I'm doing really good at the moment. I'm in a really good place. I've got, you know, amazing friends around me. I'm feeling really positive about the future. I've got great things lined up. Got something really exciting coming up. I can't say anything. I'm sorry. Really exciting.
That's great.
All I can say is I may be on your screens soon.
Lottie Moss actor.
I didn't see me there.
that's super exciting.
Yeah, super exciting. And yeah, just really excited for the future. So
that's superb. Okay, the one question that I ask every guest that comes on is, what does the word headstrong mean to you?
Headstrong. It means confidence. It means positivity. I think it just, yeah, I think just confidence. Being headstrong is being confident about who you are, where you are, what you're doing, and just being happy about where you're going in life. Yeah.
Nice. I agree. Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. Let's get some more kiddies over here. And yeah, well, best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.